Well, thank you so much for staying with us. We've all been watching what's been happening in Gaza. We decided to just get what would be an update, I suppose, with regards to what's happening. Executive Director at Dawn, Sarah Lee Whitson, is on the line with us. So thank you very, very much for making time for us again, Sarah Lee. Good evening and welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
A lot has happened over the past 24 hours. We are seeing, again, more deaths. Reports of more deaths of the children around the area where they're supposed to be getting some aid. What's your assessment of this aid coming through via these parachuted bundles over the air, and just the management of those who are purporting to be supporting the civilians on the ground with aid? How are you reading this, and is this even working at all?
Well, I think it's very clear to the entire world what's happening in Gaza, and that is that people are being starved. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation's 4 aid distribution sites are not even a drop in the bucket to the over 400 aid distribution sites that used to exist under UNRWA and other aid distribution kitchens. So it's a thin, evil, and cruel facade between these 4 sites, three of which are basically located adjacent to or continuous with Israeli military sites, as well as the so-called airdrops that have been used, which previously failed and now have been resurrected just as a last gasp of trying to do something, are not, you know, even 5% of the needs of food for the population of Gaza.
Do you see an end to this anytime soon, Sarah Lee?
I wish I could say I do. I wish I could say I hope. But clearly the latest rounds of negotiations have failed again. Netanyahu has announced today that he intends to invade and occupy all of Gaza. And in fact, he's threatening his own administration to say, and if you're not in support of this, then leave the government. The Arab League has now demanded that Hamas step away and give up all power, which is pretty extraordinary. It's really hard to imagine that there's going to be a negotiated ceasefire in any way that includes the departure of occupying Israeli forces from Gaza in the imminent future.
Where does this leave Hamas?
I mean, Hamas is still around. Hamas, at least on paper, is still the elected authority, even though elections haven't been held since 2006. Hamas, I really can't comment and have no idea about the extent of their actual capacity and actual control because of the complete collapse of anything resembling government services in Gaza. So maybe they don't have all that much to give up.
Do we know to what extent the Israeli population is now exposed to these visuals? Do we have a sense of whether, you know, the pressure to release the hostages is actually going to get or is getting to Netanyahu at all?
You know, on the hostages, if hundreds of detained Israeli hostages was not enough to persuade him to reach a negotiated solution to save the lives of these hostages, then I hardly imagine that the double-digit small number remaining now will be enough to persuade him. And indeed, the announcement he made today is that he's going to carry out military operations, including in the areas where they know hostages are held, which means bombardment, which means indiscriminate bombardment. And in fact, the numbers of hostages killed by Israelis through their military incursions into Gaza are pretty staggering. What the Israeli public knows or doesn't know is hard to digest, and opinion polls show continued overwhelming support for Israel's starvation and siege and bombardment of Gaza. On the other hand, there have been protests every day in Israel, albeit by small numbers of people. I think what is changing is the increasing impatience of the Israeli public and their in the face of their growing international isolation, knowing that Israelis are persona non grata around the world because basically the overwhelming population of the entire world stands with Palestine.
The recognition, or at least the announcements that Palestine will be recognized by some international community countries, does that move the needle somewhat? Is that going to have any impact at all? Or is this just, you know, politics as we know it?
Well, you know, I would say from a macro perspective, recognition of the state of Palestine by France and the United Kingdom would mean that all of the Security Council now recognizes the state of Palestine except for the United States. Mm. So it reflects the increasing isolation of the United States and Israel from where even America's closest allies are. And that, of course, is very much in sync with the shift of the U.S. public, where the overwhelming majority of Americans support Palestine and oppose Israel's war now. Staggering numbers of Democrats strongly oppose Israel and weapons to Israel. And those should translate into shifts in America's political position, which, frankly, is the only thing that matters. The Israeli political position wouldn't matter much but for American weapons that give Israel power and the capacity to commit their crimes. Unfortunately, will these things translate into political changes that force Israel to stop its war soon enough to save Palestinians who are dying by the hundreds every day? I don't know, because these kind of political shifts, unfortunately, tend to take place over years and months, but certainly not days. So recognition of Palestine represents a shift in the political mood, but doesn't translate into the urgent action that we need to stop the genocide now.
If we opened the corridor and aid came in is immediately, all of it, would we even save? How many people do you think would save? Would we even make an impact at all? Or is it a little too late?
Well, I mean, from what I understand from public health experts, once a famine kicks in, even the immediate delivery of aid will not stop thousands of people, potentially tens of thousands of people, from dying from the cumulative health effects of wasting on their body and the damage to their organs. Certainly their life expectancy will be dramatically shortened. But if there was a massive influx in aid, then at least the immediate crisis could be averted and more people wouldn't be subject to starvation. So it would make a tremendous difference, at least in terms of saving lives, saving the lives of children and the elderly in particular, who are the most vulnerable to food deprivation.
Are you optimistic, Sarah?
You know, I'm optimistic in knowing that the vast majority of the population of the world stands with the people of Palestine and rejects Israeli crimes and excuses for their crimes. I'm hopeful and optimistic that there is enough goodwill in the world that will ultimately correct the wrong of the Israeli state, of the Israeli apartheid state, and reform it. And that's why I've actually just published a book offering a new approach to peace in Israel-Palestine, a new plan that will replace the failed Oslo plan. So I certainly believe that it's possible to solve and fix a man-made problem, in fact, a problem made by the international community, created by the international community. But, you know, political will is an entirely different thing, and that is where we have to struggle and fight. Because sadly, our governments end up not representing the will of the people. So that's the challenge we face. The problem itself, I don't think, is that hard to solve.
And so you know, as you're saying, it may not be that hard to solve. You are now, you've just written a book where you come up with those solutions. What will it take? Will it be the change of leadership?
I mean, the plan that we propose, that my colleague, my co-author and I propose, is for the installation of a transitional government for Israel and Palestine, a transitional government that is put in place by the international community, the same international community that created the State of Israel. So they are fully capable of appointing a transitional government, and then allowing that transitional government to dismantle apartheid and occupation, and to culminate in a referendum for the people who live between the river and the sea to decide their future governance, whether they want to be in one state or two states or a confederation or a binational situation. The first thing that needs to happen, however, is for the apartheid and occupation rule over Palestine to end. I think it's possible, but have the Israeli people come to a point where they're ready to consent to a transitional government? It will take a lot more international pressure, I think, to get there.
Executive Director Dawn Sara Lee Whitson, thank you so much once again for your time.
Thank you for having me.